Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy Crane.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, and I am your host, believe it or not, Jimmy Crane. We are sponsored, of course, by Hotel Lincoln. It's the official hotel of Improv Nerd. And the next time you find yourself here in the city of Chicago, you're looking for something cool in terms of a hotel. It's boutique. It's kitschy. Not only is it pet friendly, it's improviser friendly as well. It's close to everything. It's walking distance from the Second City and the zoo and from downtown Chicago. Check out the official hotel of Improv Nerd. That is the Hotel Lincoln. And I'd like to welcome our newest sponsor. We are so excited to have these guys aboard, and that is Uncle Fun, which has been a Chicago institution for almost 3 decades. When you walk in the front door of Uncle Fun's, just know that you are walking into pure fun. You'll find some of the most unique gifts, vintage toys, novelty items, and cards. They travel the world over to find these kind of unique gifts. The last time I was there, I found some things that I thought were lost forever in my childhood. A Speed Racer t-shirt and a plush Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. If you've got $1 or $100 to spend, you will always find some cool, kitschy gift. And you'll always leave with a smile on your face. Uncle Fun, 1338 West Belmont in Chicago. Our guest today is Chris Witaski. He's a member of the Second City ETC here in Chicago. He's currently doing their latest review, Clown Car Name Desire. We talked to Chris about what it's like to audition for Saturday Night Live for 3 times, what Lorne Michaels orders when you go out with him for drinks, and what it's really like to work at the Second City. Before we get to the interview with Chris, I just want to share with you my thoughts and feelings on the recent death of Jay Leggett. Now, if you don't know Jay and Jay's work, let me take you back to Chicago, the late 80s, early 90s, and he was part of one of the legendary Improv Olympic Herald teams, Blue Velveeta. From there, he went to a couple seasons on Living Color, and he got to work alongside Jim Carrey. He then, as he continued to act, became a screenwriter, and he wrote several screenplays and became a film director. And I was lucky enough to work with him back in 1991, and I will tell you something. It was probably the most talent I got to work with in any improv group. We weren't earth-shattering, I'll tell you that. We were just doing short form in the basement of an Italian restaurant in Chicago's North Side. Andy Richter was in that group, David Koechner was in that group, Brian Stack, Brian McCann, Kevin Dorff, Noah Gregoropoulos, Brian Blundell, Brendan Sullivan, myself, and Jay Leggett. Now, if you were going to ask me back then, who was going to make it? Of all those names that I just rattled off, I would have told you on Drive Alone, Jay Leggett was going to make it. Jay was so driven. But not only was he driven, he was talented. He not only as an improviser, but as a musician and as an actor. And that group, the Comedy Underground, I'm surprised we lasted as long as we did. I think we lasted about a year. We had some really strong personalities, and Jay was one of them. I'll never forget the night that Jon Favreau, a young Jon Favreau who was auditioning for a movie called Rudy, which eventually he got, wanted to sit in with the Comedy Underground because the casting directors were going to come and scout talent, and they were going to come particularly to see John, and the group decided, no, he can't do that. That's the kind of mentality we were dealing with in terms of our strong personalities. And Jay was one of those strong personalities. He wore his heart on his sleeve. He was very passionate. He was very intense on and off stage. And he could be difficult to work with at times. We were young back then. And here's the beautiful part. When you're part of a group that has that much talent, and there's some creative tension, and there's strong personalities, that stuff, the good stuff, the great shows, and then the offstage drama, that bonds you together. It's kind of like being in war, I guess is the best analogy. And you feel like they're family. And we didn't work together that long, maybe a year, maybe a year and a half. But you have this connection with people. And when I heard Jay had died, I felt really, really sad. And it reminded me why I decided to do improv. And I could lie when I first started and say, well, I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live or be hired by Second City or make people laugh. But when somebody dies that you started out with, you realize why you did go into this. And that is to become part of a community, something that's bigger than yourself. And that really, in all of this, it's the people that matter. And I forget that all the time. And when Jay was here in Chicago, one of his day jobs was he was a street musician. He would play in the subways of Chicago. And I remember asking him, I'm a big James Taylor fan, about an obscure song that James Taylor had written called Millworker. And I said, do you ever play that? And Jay said, yeah, I play that because it reminds me of where I came from in Wisconsin. So, in honor of Jay Leggett, and before we go to the interview with Chris, I'd like to play Millworker.
Let this manufacturer use my body for a tool. I can ride home in the evening, staring at my hand, swearing by my sorrow that a young girl ought to stand a better chance. May I work the mills just as long as I am able, and never meet the man whose name is on the label. It'd be me and my machine for the rest of the morning and the rest of the afternoon gone for the rest of the morning.
We got water on the questions, but that doesn't matter because we're still going to go forward with the interview. Chris, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy.
We're not going to get electrocuted, are we, Ben?
Possibly.
Okay, great, because the recording device is right here. You grew up in St. Charles.
I did.
Which is about an hour from Chicago.
Yes.
And you and a friend started performing magic at birthday parties. What did you like about doing magic?
Where the fuck did you get this information?
It's all over the internet.
So my grandfather used to do magic tricks at the Thanksgiving dinner table, and that's what really kind of spurred my interest in magic. And so my dad would then drive us into Chicago to go to a magic shop on the north side of Chicago on Lincoln Avenue called Magic Incorporated. And we started taking magic lessons there. And so I started my career in show business as a magician.
But you guys were, you and a friend, you actually would do birthday parties.
Yes.
And stuff.
We did birthday parties for about 3 years, all in my neighborhood and all over St. Charles. We got booked to do birthday parties.
How much did you make? I'm curious.
Oh, you know, back then probably $50 a show or something, but that was, you know.
And how long would the shows go for? I mean, how many tricks did you have?
You know, I don't remember. I bet the shows were 45 minutes, and we had a whole bunch of different tricks, whether it was card magic or coin magic or, like, big illusions. And, I mean, we weren't, like, doing huge David Copperfield tricks. But I really have fond memories of that.
And then when you're 13 or 14, you go to Second City, and you see the main stage show, mm-hmm. Slaughterhouse 5, Cattle 0.
Yep.
And you immediately sign up for improv classes. You ditch magic for improv. What was it about improv?
You know, I grew up watching, you know, my parents would let me stay up to watch SNL, and I grew up watching movies like Ghostbusters and Animal House and all that kind of stuff. And so I think when I remember I had heard about Second City, but didn't quite know exactly what it was. And so when I walked into that place for the first time and saw all these black and white photos on the walls of my heroes, it all kind of like came together for me, like, oh, this is what I want to do. And I remember seeing that show. It just blew me away. I still like have vivid memories of seeing that show that night. And
what was just one memory that you remember from that show?
And there's a scene in that show, Captain Monkey Paw. Show at all? Okay, so yeah. Rich Talrico comes out with a monkey paw for a hand and then a regular hand here. And he goes, bastards took my hand and replaced it with this human hand. And I mean, I remember that so vividly. Like, God, it just so fucking
so
funny.
The next day, you're like, I'm going to get into the teen program in Second City?
Yes.
And how were your parents? Were they like...
Very supportive. Uh-huh. Very supportive. Because I think, looking back, I probably had an undiagnosed case of ADD as a kid. I wasn't a good student, but I was always funny, and I was always the class clown. And I think I used humor to get out of, you know, sticky situations and
like, give me an example of a sticky situation that you would get out of as a kid.
You know, being a shitty student, I think if I could make the teacher laugh, I would then, you know, not have to answer the question.
Did you, like, for me, I was a terrible student, and I can relate to this. I cheated.
Yes, like, oh, so did I.
You know, how did you cheat?
By looking over people's shoulders.
Yes, yeah. That's how I did it.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually had a tutor where my parents paid money for him to write us papers.
Wow.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Now, it's 16. Okay.
I was just with my mom last night. We were hanging out, and she reminded me of this. My fifth grade teacher once asked me, my dad had gotten a surgery on his esophagus. And my fifth grade teacher asked me, Chris, how did your dad's surgery go? And my response was, oh, his sex change operation, it was a success. That was in fifth grade.
Yeah. Now, was your mom like proud of you when she was told this story, or were they annoyed about it?
I think proud, secretly proud. They, yeah.
Are they proud of you now? With
very.
Okay.
Very. My mom saw both of my, I did two shows at Second City last night, and she watched both. At the 8 p.m.
You're kidding
and the
11
p.m.
You're kidding me. And then
just
because
she loves...
And then you invited her up to the improv set.
She would do it.
Yeah. But. Would she?
I bet she would, yeah.
Okay, and then at 16 or 17, you then take classes at the I.O. Or what are you looking at? You're looking around?
I'm
Is that your ADD?
Dark. Yeah, that's my ADD.
Yeah. Chris is just wandering. So at 16 and 17, you take classes at the I.O.
Right. Yeah.
And then they put you in the adult classes, right?
Yes.
What was it like to be one of the youngest people in an adult class at I.O.?
I remember it was scary, but I just knew I'd laser beam focus. Like, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to do. And so it was very exciting for me.
So you have this laser beam focus, yet you then go to college. You go to Iowa. Why not just stay on the path?
I think that both my parents went to college. All my friends in high school were going to college. I think it was just out of the question not to.
Would you ever like bring it up to them and go, look, I love this. I know this is what I want to do. I don't want to go to college.
I think I wanted to go to college because this is so cliche, but I thought college was the movie Animal House. And I was excited for that. And I made it that. I mean, like, when I went to college...
Were you a big partier?
I was.
Like a big-time drinker.
Big okay. time, yes.
Drugs, too?
Yeah.
Okay, what kind?
Yeah.
Pot, cocaine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in college.
Do you ever do ecstasy? I never got to do ecstasy.
Very fun.
Is it?
Yes. Until Tuesday. Have you ever heard about Suicide Tuesdays?
No, tell me about it.
So, Saturday night you take ecstasy, you have the best night of your life.
Got to drink a lot of water,
yes,
right?
Yes, because it dehydrates you. And you drink beer, like, I mean, you can drink a case of beer.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. Good to know. This is what I like about the podcast. We're there to help the improviser.
Yeah. But so, you have the best night of your life on Saturday, but then...
But when you say the best night of your life, what is it? I mean, you love everything?
Ecstasy makes the serotonin in your brain all come out at once, so it's like this euphoric feeling. And
so are you like humping trees? I mean, what?
Yes,
what is,
mostly.
Okay.
No, I mean, like, you know, I think a great concert on ecstasy is one of the best feelings you'll... How did we get to that? So, but then on Tuesday, you feel like shit, and you
want to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Really down in depression.
I mean, down in the dumps, yeah.
So, you after graduating from college from Iowa, you come back to Chicago.
Yeah.
And one of your dreams is Second City, right, at this point?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yes.
So, you enroll in the conservatory.
Yes.
In the conservatory, you have to audition. You got to get in. They teach you how to do a Second City-style review.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work out the way you thought it would. You quit.
I did quit.
Why'd you quit?
I had Michael Gelman twice in a row, and he hated me for some reason. He was just, I think he was at a bad point in his life maybe at that point. But he was just kind of an asshole, and I just didn't.
How did he make it hell for you?
I think he picked me as the guy that he didn't like. And he just, in scenes, nope, okay, get off the stage. That's not how you do it. Get off the stage. And it was tough for me. So I quit. I dropped out of the conservatory, and that's when I found the annoyance.
So what were you thinking at that point where you're like, oh, my dream of Second City is over?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so how'd you get over that?
The annoyance really saved me.
In what way?
I then enrolled in classes there, and that was where that was the first time where I was like, oh, this is going to be my home. This is the kind of work I want to be doing.
You know, I started at the Annoyance in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was always this sense of anything can happen there. You can do anything. You can put anything on stage. Why? And it seemed like your experience was the same
thing.
It was,
yeah.
What do you think it is about that place that fosters that?
I think that you can do whatever you want on this stage. I think that there's a freedom in that as a performer where you truly, they are not going to censor you. I mean, short of racism and hurting people, you can
physically hurting people.
Right.
Emotionally,
yeah.
They encourage that.
But I think there's freedom in that as a performer to really, holy shit, I can do whatever I want.
The other thing I found interesting too, which is similar when I started the Annoyance, you don't audition for anything.
Right.
It's explain how you get cast in a show.
So I took the program and when I was in level 5 with Mick, he would always, after class, say, I'm going to the bar downstairs after class if anybody wants to join me. And he would go down to Crew, which is the gay sports bar right next to the Green Mill, and he would have lunch every day and shoot the shit. And so I would make it a point to always go. And we just became friends in that way. And Mick once said to me, I think this really encapsulates what you're talking about. He said, people ask him all the time, how would I get into an Annoyance show? How do I audition for the Annoyance? How do I da 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 da? And Mick said, we're going to hire the people who don't ask that question.
I've known Mick for a long time. He's a hard guy to get close to. Would you agree?
Yes.
How close have you been able to get to Mick? Cause
I think very close. If you were to ask me who's my number one mentor guru guy, I would tell you Mick Napier.
Who is your number one mentor guru guy?
Mick Napier.
And then I find that he was such the number one guru guy that you, when he went to go direct the 50th anniversary Second City show, you wanted to be assistant to the director there.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, as an actor and a sketch player and an improviser, why was it so important to be in on that process? Because that assistant director, people don't know, you don't get paid, and you're doing getting people coffee and doing copies. It's not a glamorous job.
No, it's not.
So why was it important to you?
So go back to the University of Iowa. I was a theater major, and what I had when I was in college was a VHS copy of, it's called Second to None. And what it is it goes behind the scenes of a Second City process. And this was the show Paradigm Lost when Mick was directing the main stage. And it was Tina Fey and
Rachel Dratch was in that.
Yep,
Jim Zulovic, Scott Adsit,
yep.
Kevin Dorff.
Yep.
Jenna Jolovitz was in that.
Yes.
Was Scott Ullman?
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
That's the cast right there, six
right.
people.
But I mean, that was Pinatas. Was a huge show, and that was before. And I think Mick had a lot of pressure in Paradigm Lost.
Yes.
So getting back to the VHS tape that you had.
So I watched the shit out of that. It was like my.
It was real grainy and.
Yeah. Yes. It was like when you used to tape porno on Cinemax. It was
yes.
Like that.
I liked when the fuzz would be at the top when you get the bad signal.
For porn?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be like,
"What's? Can I ask you? What's porn like on ecstasy?"
Oh, baby.
All right. Yeah. All right. So you'd seen this. You're the one bringing it up. You can answer whatever you want. Okay, so
I knew how cool that process was, and it was it was my obsession. I was like, I want to, after college, I want to go back to Chicago. I want to do Second City. This, it was so cool to me, and so I knew how special it would be, an experience to just be in the room for a process. So I begged Mick to let me be his assistant to the director for that.
What did you learn from that?
So much, so much. Just being in the room and just smelling it and seeing how they put together a show. I learned to pick your battles, and the director, you know, he's the ringmaster of this whole thing, and at the end of the day, it's the director's show. And I learned how to pitch scenes, how to write scenes, how to come in with an idea and then improvise it and turn it into a scene. That was a very valuable experience for me.
And then you get hired by Second City. You do one of their boats, yeah. And then you get a touring company, and then in between there, you get the first time you auditioned for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
They saw me in one of those showcases at I.O., and I did 5 minutes, they give you 5 minutes, and I just did one character the whole time. A lot of people do, you know, a bunch of different characters, impressions, and da-da-da-da.
Now, did you have a lot to choose from at that point?
No.
You had one character.
I had one character.
You're betting the whole house on let's hope they didn't call your bluff.
Right, yeah. Right. And it was, the character was, get this, a birthday party magician. actually based on when I did the cruise ship for Second City, there was this shitty, horrible 80s comedian, magician named Greg Gleason on the cruise ship. And he, dressed in tight black leather pants and like this poofy pirate shirt. And he had like the worst facelift. Like you could see his facelift scars. And I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. And it was so, this really cheesy cruise ship magician act that I then came home to Chicago and said, I'm just going to do that guy's act, but turn it into a solo show. And I did it at The Annoyance. Mick and I did a double bill where Mick and Jennifer did their mental magic and I did this birthday party magician character.
Because that's something you have in common, because Mick loves magic too.
Right.
And now that he's stopped drinking, you'll see him at the bar and he's just doing the card tricks.
Shuffling, you know, cards, keeping his hands busy.
Right. So you get to Saturday Night Live, ask you to audition based on what they saw here in Chicago at the showcase at I.O.
Correct.
Then you do well in the audition, and then you meet with Lorne Michaels.
Yes.
And what does Lorne Michaels say to you?
He says, we really liked your audition, and...
Did he say it like that, or did he say, we really liked your audition?
Well, we really enjoyed your audition. Yeah. We think you're just a little bit too young at this point, but we're going to keep you on our radar. And he talked about Malcolm Gladwell and the 10,000 hours rule. Mm-hmm. And he said, go back to Chicago and keep getting better, and then we'll see you in a little while.
So he's called you back twice now.
Three times. And I did not get hired.
What happened the last time? Which was actually, when was it?
At the 2 or 3 months ago.
Okay, so tell me what happened.
I auditioned again. I got flown out to New York.
Okay, did you do the magician character? Or?
No.
Okay, all right. What did you do for the audition?
I did an impression of my dad. I did.
How does that go?
I set it up as when I was 13 years old, I had a sleepover one night with some of my buddies in my room, and we, around 2 in the morning, started blaring music. And right around that time, my dad burst through the door wearing his boxer shorts and a t-shirt, and this is what he said. Down! Down! Way down!
That's great.
That's it, yeah. So I did that. That got a nice laugh in the room. You know they say they don't laugh and all
right.
that shit.
That's not true.
You get laughs. It's very quiet room, and it's the SNL studio is huge. Mm-hmm. It's like this big, you know, warehouse feeling, echoey thing, and you're performing into a vacuum. Mm-hmm. But you get laughs. You can get laughs.
So you did that, and then what celebrities did you do?
Because I did an impression of Chevy Chase hanging up a telephone.
How's that go?
He just really struggles hanging up a telephone. Okay. I did some of my dad. I counted in my head. I counted that as an impression. In the past, I did an impression of George Lopez when he had his talk show. I did an impression of that.
And that goes like,
"We got a great show from two broke girls. We got the main guy."
Now we, as you're doing this, you're blushing a little, and we talked about this backstage about how us in Chicago, there's almost like we don't do impressions. So when we're asked to do impressions, it's kind of,
it's this weird thing. Yeah.
Explain it.
I think that in Chicago, you go through all these classes and you see all these shows where it's very artistic. You know, you're trying to say something in your comedy. You're trying to play to the top of your intelligence. You're trying to be grounded and organic and all that kind of thing. That's the Chicago mentality at I.O. and Second City. And so then when you're asked to do impressions, it feels like a little hacky. It feels a little like, that's not my thing. When have I ever done a show in Chicago where I've been asked to do impressions? Never.
Right. And if you'd done it in Gelman's class, he would have said, off the stage.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you're asked to prepare that. And that, more than anything, put me in my head when preparing the audition.
And the audition goes well enough that you get to meet Lorne for another time.
Yes.
And what does he tell you in this? I haven't forgot about you, Chris.
I am right. Yeah, so I mean, this is the third time now that I've been out there. So they've flown me out there six times. And so we had drinks. He invited some of the auditionees to a hotel bar.
Anyone we know that went on to get it?
No. With me was Mike Kaczynski, who's in my cast.
Okay.
Brooke Bright.
Who's in your cast.
Correct. Carissa Bereka, who's in my cast.
Okay.
And
was that good to have people there? Did you feel supported, or did you feel like, hey, this is my opportunity to, I'm going to New York?
It was very supportive for me. Okay. Every time I ever went out there, it was so great to have friends.
So you go out there with these guys.
Yep.
And what do you guys talk about?
So at these drinks, he actually sat down right next to me.
I'm going to sit next to Chris.
And we just started shooting the breeze, and we sat there and talked for like 45 minutes, and I asked him about Bill Murray, and I asked him what was it like. I asked him the first time he saw John Belushi. Mm-hmm. I said, was it at Second City? He said, no, it was actually in New York, and John and I didn't get along at first. He thought he didn't want to do television. He was more of a stage guy, and they butted heads like that.
What did he say about Bill Murray?
He said Bill Murray had a hard time at first on SNL. He wasn't successful right away because he took over for Chevy Chase, and there's that story of him and Chevy Chase getting into a fist fight backstage, and he said it took a little while for Bill to break out.
So how did you leave it with Lauren?
So that night, he said...
I'm going to pick it up. I got the drinks. Don't worry about it, Chris. It's on me.
I had drank two Manhattans.
Right.
And,
did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
In retrospect, I wonder if that hurt me. Because the waitress came around. She's like, anybody else? I'm like, oh, yeah. There's great. This was my favorite thing from that whole evening. He called over the waitress, and he says, I'd like to order some fries, but here's what's going to happen. If I order fries, then everybody here at the table is going to want to eat my fries. So bring out like six orders of fries. That was great. I'll never forget that. So after that, those drinks were before the audition. The audition was the next day.
Okay. So the night before, he's taking you out for drinks?
Right.
So what are you feeling? Like, my chances are, he wouldn't ask me to go out for drinks if I didn't have a good shot at this.
Right. The thing about this time around was there were way more people auditioning than ever before because they had all these slots to fill now. You know, Sudeikis is gone. Fred Armisen's gone. Bill Hader's gone. So they have these big slots to fill. So they auditioned like 35 people this time around. So in my head, it's that, you know, that feeling when you walk into O'Connor or TPR for an audition and you go, oh my God, this is a room full of people who look just like me.
Right.
You know?
For people in the podcast, those are two local casting agents here that we go to audition for.
Right. So also at this table was other guys who looked like me.
Right.
You know, and so that's what was going on in my head was like, fuck, that, you know, there's 30 other funny white guys who, you know.
So how'd the audition go, the third time you did it?
I thought it went okay. I felt really good after the audition. There was one sound cue that kind of got screwed up that in retrospect, I'm like, fuck, maybe I shouldn't have used the sound cue, you know? I took a risk on that and it kind of didn't pay off.
Now, do you hear anything? Do after that? Do they tell you how you did? Do you talk to your manager or agent?
Yes. So then a couple weeks go by and didn't hear anything. And then I talked to my manager, Naomi Odenkirk.
Bob's wife.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And my agent at William Morris Endeavor called me and said, we got bad news. It's not going to happen this time around. And then a couple days later, I got a very nice email from SNL.
How do you feel like when other, you know, like you're close and other people get it, you know, like this, they, a new crop of people were hired this year.
Yeah.
White guys, similar, a couple guys were similar to your type,
yep.
I'd say. How do you feel about that?
It stings, it hurts, you know, and I think too, you know, I'm such a Chicago guy that I'm rooting for Chicago people. And when all of a sudden, you know, all these guys who I don't know from LA get hired, that, I think, that's tough for me because I really want, you know, when my friend 80 got hired, it was so exciting. Yeah. And when Vanessa,
Bear,
I was on the cruise ship with Vanessa. So when she got hired, it was like, yes, Chicago people getting hired. And so this time around, when all of a sudden it's these guys who, you know, I'm sure are great, but I don't know them. It's like, fuck you, you fucking LA guy. Who are
right.
you? You know? Yeah, yeah. So that's the honest reaction. But now I think looking back on it, it's just, okay, it didn't happen.
And how do you get over that disappointment? You know?
Ecstasy.
Okay. A full tab, or do you take a full tab, or you split it up?
Full tab. Two tabs. No, I think, yeah, go ahead.
Because, I mean, you know, it's so cool to be so close, but it's also, you know, the higher you go, you know, the more, the deeper the depression can be.
For sure.
How do you move on?
For me, it was actually kind of a relief because it was this dangling carrot for the last 3 years. I mean, they kept flying me out there and they kept, you know, telling me that we really want to hire you, da-da-da-da-da. And so it was always like this thing hanging over me, you know, that when they sent me this really nice email saying, hey, we're not going to hire you right now, and we want you to come back and host sometime when you're famous and tell us to fuck off. That's what this email said. And
cut to 5 years. I never said that, Chris.
Right. So I think it just felt like this relief. It was like, okay, I can move on with my life now without this thing, this dangling carrot. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to improvise now.
Okay.
So what we need from you is what do we want to take? What kind of suggestion? How do you like to improvise?
With no pants on.
Okay. Which is great for the podcast.
You know, lately our sets at Second City have been like fast and funny.
Right.
And I miss slow.
Okay, so we'll do a little slow.
Yeah.
So what would you like to take?
Well, maybe a relationship.
Great. Could we have a relationship, please?
Student mentor.
Okay, and when you hear student mentor, what goes in terms of your process? What do you do with the suggestion?
I think immediately in this right now, I think this is a great suggestion because we could easily play student mentor. You could be the mentor, I could be the student, or we could do the the reversal, which could also be fun.
Okay, and we're going to discover that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, awesome. So if we could take the lights down. Now, what time is it? Because we got to get Chris has got to get out of here.
I got to go do ecstasy. At,
You do ecstasy before the show or after the show?
Both shows, yeah.
10 to 6. Okay, so let's do the improv around 10, no more than 12 minutes. So look for an out up there. Take the lights down. We don't need to take the lights down, but you'll take the lights down when we're done. All right, we can bring
and
the lights
up. And then are we done, or then do we do a Q&A?
Then we come back and we get some questions and answers for the audience and talk about what we just did.
Okay. Okay? I just want to say thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I used to watch, so I used to go to Armando all the time when I was in high school to watch improv shows. I tried to go like every week. We'd drive in from the suburbs. And I remember watching you perform in Armando and always admiring your work. So this is a
thank you.
Treat for me.
Because it's very hard for me to take in the compliment,
sure.
Number one. And two, then I feel like pressure. You know, like, oh, I better be really good. So pretty, you know. No, when I have people on the show, like whoever's on the show, I want them to leave and not only think I was a good interviewer, but like we had the greatest time in the improv and it, you know. It's crazy. I'm crazy. All right, so let's do the scene, okay? You're still here, huh?
Yeah.
I dismissed the class about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I thought I could come back and ask you a question if you don't mind.
Sure, I've got about 4 minutes before the faculty meeting.
Were you just doodling?
Yes, I like to doodle. I enjoy doodling. It's a way to relax. I'm also planning the assignment for next week.
It's a great class today.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. That was a good question you asked about the American Revolution. I never thought of Paul Revere in that way.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yes. I like to think outside the box since it's a math class, you know, ask questions. But my question isn't about math, Mr. Jones.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Like it's I not told about you. The American Revolution either.
All right, Paul.
It's about life, sir.
Sure, sure. I'll tell you what, Paul. I'm just going to grab a chair here. Why don't
sure.
you grab a chair from the over there with this? About life, Paul. I like life, you know that. I like to talk about life. I've had a great life. I've had a very big life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seems like it.
Yes.
You're not married?
I'm not married, no. It's my choice.
You're a math teacher?
Yes. Math teacher who should have been a history teacher.
Yeah. Seems like you like having a good time.
I like having a good time. I love having a good time.
Yeah.
I make my own beer in my bathtub.
See, I want a life like that, Mr.
Yes.
Jones. I go home to my stupid parents and they're not happy.
Your parents aren't happy?
No.
What's going on with your parents at home that they're not happy?
They sleep in separate bedrooms.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
I know, right?
Yes.
Doesn't seem like a loving marriage.
No, it's not a loving marriage. If they loved each other, they'd be in the same bed.
Exactly. That's why I want to be more like you. I don't think I want to get married. I just want to party, you know?
Paul, I've had a lot of students over the last 15 years, and finally I get one that is speaking common sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I want to be like you. I don't want to get married. I want to sneak drinks while I'm teaching a math class. You know?
I do that because it settles my medication.
Sure, yeah.
I don't have,
sure.
I have a very rare disease, you know that. I can't stand up for a long period of time in the class.
What disease is it? Polio?
Yes, it is. Paul, it's polio. But you see,
I thought Bill Gates got rid of that.
Well, that's he has gotten rid of it, but my strand is very rare. He hasn't gotten rid of that. So I take a muscle relaxer and a little old style or some Smirnoff vodka. Whatever's on sale that week at Osco.
Gosh.
Yes.
You're a role model.
Thank you.
How can I be more like you? How could I become you?
All right.
Is that your question?
Yes.
All right. Well, I have an answer for you.
Oh, all right. Are you sure you want to stand?
Well, you know, the medicine's kicking in now. I probably only have a couple of minutes on my feet, but you've gotten me so excited, Paul, I'll help you there.
I'll stand in solidarity.
Oh, that's great, Paul. Okay, so the first thing is you have to devote yourself to a career.
Okay.
And what career would you like to devote yourself to?
Well, let's see here. My dad is an insurance salesman.
Insurance salesman, all right.
So I don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
All right, who do you look up to? Who do you look up to?
Let's see here, there's you.
Yes, yes, good start there.
Okay.
Okay, so what do I do for a living?
You're a math teacher.
A math teacher, yes. So, yes. So we could pursue the same dream that I have that for you.
Yeah.
All right, so math teacher.
But as you've seen on my tests, I'm not very good at math.
I'm not a very good math teacher.
That's true.
Yes. I don't even. I'll tell you, if the calculator wasn't invented, I couldn't teach this class.
Really?
Yes. I. You know what? I'm going to take a seat here. This is between you and I.
Okay.
I don't know anything about math. You know Mr. Lindbergh?
Yes.
Yeah, head of the. I steal all his lesson plans and I just teach them.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a, what is that sheet there where I match them up when you take a test?
The match it up sheet.
The match them up sheet. Well, I wouldn't even know if that was right or wrong. I don't even know anything.
15 years you've been doing
15
this?
15 years, yes. I'm a drunk and I'm a terrible math, yes.
Wow.
Yes, I feel so liberated. I've never told anybody this. I am a fraud, Paul. I am a fraud. And you know what? You could be a fraud, too.
Wow.
Yes. Do you know how much sex I get? Unprotected sex with people I don't even know.
A lot?
Tons of it.
Where do you meet these people?
Right here in the classroom. It's a hallway thing. This is a hornet's nest. Do you know cute women come in with big breasts? They want AIDS, right?
They want AIDS?
AIDS.
Oh, right,
AIDS. AIDS. Now, AIDS is something totally different. We don't want to get that confused.
Right.
Because if we bring that up, we're going to scare off the women, right?
Right.
So make sure you get tested.
All right?
Because that's the first thing they're going to ask.
So you sleep with most of your...
I sleep with most of my students, yes.
Wow.
Some of the best sex I've ever gotten has been in this room.
Really?
Right on that desk over there.
Right there?
Yes, you know Heidi.
Yeah, sure.
Heidi.
She's developed quickly.
Oh my God, she is only 19 years old, but she has a breast like 30-year-old.
Wow, yes. Breasts like 30-year-old.
Yes, yeah, they're a little saggy. That's between you and I. We did it right there on that desk there.
Wow.
Why do you think she doesn't show up to class? She doesn't have to anymore. She's got an A for the rest of the term. Paul, did you ever see Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Indiana Jones?
Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom. Yeah. Oh, you are.
That's a different movie.
What? We'll put them together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a metaphor here.
Right.
You have just gotten, what is the thing that he went to get? You know, the...
Sure.
That thing, yes.
The box.
You are in the box right now.
Wow, Mr. Jones.
It's not going to get any better than this for you.
Wait a second.
Yes.
Your last name is Jones.
Yes.
Indiana Jones. Was that movie based on you?
Oh, Paul. Of course it was. But Paul, that's between us, all right? See, let me tell you something. You want to hold on to a secret, right?
Sure.
So if I'm banging Heidi up there, then I tell her that Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was based on my life.
And that works?
Oh, she orgasms like a cow. It's amazing.
Like a cow?
Yes, I was from Iowa.
Are cows known for their orgasms?
Yes, what have you been learning in my class? Did you miss the first week? We talked about orgasms.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. I had not stolen that lesson plan yet because he was sick. He was out for the day. So I just kind of ad-libbed it and talked about orgasms. I was so drunk that day, Paul.
I remember that. Yeah, that was kind of strange, actually, in retrospect.
Yes, but the thing is, they're going to remember this class. They're going to remember me. You have to do stuff differently.
Wow, Mr. Jones.
Paul, I want to get you something. I want to give you something right now.
A gift?
A gift, yes.
How are your legs?
They're feeling a little better. but they'll feel a little better with a little vodka.
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Jones. Oh, I'm only 19.
Paul.
Jones? Mr. Jones.
You can call me Indiana if you'd like. Here you go. There you go, a little vodka. Don't worry. You know, you've drank before.
No, I never have.
All right?
There's no smell to it.
Right. It's clear. There's a taste. It's going to be kind of pungent, so be careful.
Wow.
You're becoming a man today. How does it feel?
Feels great.
Just ahead.
Take a sip?
Take a sip.
Drink all of
no,
it.
No. Take a sip.
Oh.
Yes. Oh.
You drink this stuff every day?
Oh, yeah. For breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yes.
Jeez Louise, Mr. Jones. I mean Indiana.
Yes. I'm going to make a toast right now.
Give me more.
All right. You are a quick learner. Yes, you are. There you go.
A toast. To new beginnings and old drunks.
You know, in the third movie of Indiana Jones, oh, that is so tasty. Oh, that is good.
Smirnoff makes a good product.
Yes. I put a little Coke Zero in it, just to give it a little lemony flavor.
Sure.
Anyway, in the third picture of Indiana Jones, there was a helper. Do you remember this? Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, Shia LaBeouf, yes.
Whatever his name was.
Shia LaBeouf, yes. Shia LaBeouf.
Do you remember that?
Sure, I do.
Third in it. Not as good as the first two pictures. But he had a sidekick. Paul?
Yes.
You are my sidekick.
Wow.
Yes.
There was also another sidekick, the little Asian boy in the other movie.
Yeah, there's always a sidekick in the Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And in the first one, it was actually that, was it Kathleen Turner?
Sure.
Yes, she was the sidekick.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, my. Mr. Jones.
Yes, Paul.
Can we go on an adventure together?
Yes, of course we go on an adventure.
Here in the school?
Here in the school. Right now we can go on an adventure.
What if we go down to the girls' gym locker room?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Are you allowed in there?
Oh, look, I'm a teacher. I abuse my power at every chance I get. Of course we can go in there.
Wow.
And you know who can abuse their power too?
Who?
My assistant, the little Asian boy from the second picture.
Me!
Yes, Paul.
Wow!
Yes. But before we do it, we need a little more vodka.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you feel? Do you feel charged? Oh, yes.
I feel all warm inside and tingly.
Great. I've got it. I'll just have a little more right here.
Oh,
there you go. I keep styrofoam cups right in my desk.
This is awesome.
Yes. You know when I say during class, I think I've lost the chalk. I need to find some chalk, and I go down.
And then you spend about 4 to 5 minutes down there.
I'm finishing off a whole bottle of Smirnoff.
No way. Yes. Every once in a while, you'll pop up and say, can't find the chalk anywhere. And you go back down.
That's exactly right, Paul. That's exactly right. You know who I really like in class?
Heidi?
Oh, yes, but Heidi's gone.
That's right.
I've already fucked her.
That's right.
Is that...
You say swear words, too?
Oh, yes.
That's awesome!
It gets dirtier. It gets dirtier in here. It's like a men's locker room. Yes.
Who do you like?
Oh, I like that Vanessa.
Yeah.
Yes. Vanessa
She's got a
Carlson.
Couple of major league yabbles.
Oh, that's Do you know if she's dating anyone, Paul?
Well, she was seeing Troy from the football
team. Oh, Troy's a loser.
Yeah, that's what I say, too.
People that play sports are...
losers!
You go, Paul.
Exactly. You may seem cool now, but just wait. A couple years from now, you're going to be still in town working at a machine shop.
There we go, Paul. There you are a fast learner. So, the second thing you need to learn is putting down people.
Really?
Yes, that have bigger ambitions than you.
Yeah.
Like what we just did with that jerky football player.
Troy
was trying to get in Vanessa's pants. Because you know who should be in Vanessa's pants?
Who?
A 50-year-old man.
Yeah!
Improv. Oh, my God. That was a lot of fun.
That was really fun.
I had a blast.
I did too.
Now,
for me to play a mentor or a teacher, a character like that, is really in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, and that's my wheelhouse too.
Playing the
oh gee whiz kind of, yeah, that's fun for me.
What do you find fun about it?
I kind of get to play this impressionable kid who doesn't know about the world, mm-hmm. and I think that immediately there's a game there, mm-hmm. that it's just fun to play. It's fun to heighten.
Okay, and so for our listeners and for me too, what was the game there?
The game was I'm just this wide-eyed kid who did wah gee whiz, and immediately you become this. It starts off as the mentor scene, mm-hmm. and you heighten it by becoming this horrible fucking person,
right.
you know. And so the game there is how can you heighten becoming just being this fucking idiot asshole guy, and I can just. Sit back and play the, oh, wow!
And some people might say, well, that was a teaching scene.
Sure.
What would you say to that?
It was fun. I mean, like, and they would say that was a bad scene because it was a teaching scene. Is that what you're saying?
People that are starting out will say, well, we're told not to do a teaching scene. We're told not to do a transaction scene.
Sure.
What would you say to that?
I don't care. I mean, I'm just more concerned about having fun, and it felt like we were having fun.
It was a blast. And you're approaching it from a character point of view. So when you say game, what is your definition of game? Because the definition of game seems like everyone's got their own.
Sure. I think it's just finding what it is to play, which in that was the heightening of me being the kid who wants to learn about the world, you being the mentor, and then just heightening the shit out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the game to me.
Okay, great. Yeah. We are now going to take some questions for Chris. So if we could turn the lights up, have the house lights up, and we've got a question right here.
Hi.
What is your name?
My name is Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. And where do you study?
I'm in the Second City Conservatory.
Okay, great.
So my question is, you were talking about, like, we're doing this, like, organic, crunchy-feely thing, and then we're expected to kind of transition into, like, impressions and topical things that's different and foreign. Like, what was your process to kind of discover how to tap into that stuff? Like, I'm like, who could I do impressions of? What is topical? What matters? Like, what's your process for that?
Sure. I think that when I was working on, like, for example, my audition or whatever, I really got in my head where I would, like, go on the internet and look at YouTube videos and, like, who do I look like? Who can I do an impression of? And that put me in my head immediately. And I think that happens a lot. I think people are like, oh, I should do Owen Wilson ordering a sandwich, you know? And that doesn't work for me. So what I really try and do is just, if I'm having fun or if it's funny to me, then I'll stick with that. So like George Lopez thing for me, for example, that's really funny to me. And so that was fun to create because it was at its core funny, you know?
And you know, the thing about you, the George Lopez, it's not like the most dead on George Lopez.
Not at all.
But what you captured was this attitude.
Yes.
And is that enough for you?
For me, it is. For me, when I look back at SNL, Will Ferrell was
right.
so great to me. And his impressions are barely close to the person, you know? But it was always so fun to watch.
Well, because he was basically playing an attitude.
Exactly.
You know? Great. Another question right here.
I'm Maggie Jo.
Hi, Maggie Jo. And where do you study?
I'm new to Chicago. I study at IO, and I'm about to start at the conservatory at Second City. And I was so psyched to see you perform with Bob and David, and I was wondering if that was a significant gig for you. Were they heroes of yours, or was that just kind of another job?
And when you say Bob and David from Mr. Show, Bob Odenkirk and David Cross.
They were here a month ago. I just wasn't...
They were here a month?
I saw you walk out, and I was like, that's incredible, because I worship them. So I was just curious if that was significant to
It was
you.
Very significant for me. Yeah. Back in college, the other thing I was watching, besides that Second City VHS, was Mr. Show. That was a huge influence for me in college. Became friends with Bob through Naomi. Naomi saw me do a show and sign me. You know, she's my manager now or whatever. And so then through that, I got to meet Bob, and he has kind of taken me under his wing. And so they were just in town a couple weeks ago doing a show with the Vic, kind of a Mr. Show reunion. Mm-hmm. And Bob called me and asked if I would be in it. And so I got to be in like four sketches with them at the sold-out show at the Vic, two shows. And so that was a huge
thrill.
What is it about Bob? Bob really seems to want to mentor. He's just the birthday boys. He's mentored them. They were a UCB group that just started their show on IFC.
Yes.
It's a sketch show. What is it about him? He just seems to be wanting to help people.
Bob is a kid at heart, and he loves comedy. More than anything, he loves comedy. And so if he meets someone or sees something in someone that I think has potential to further comedy, he gets very excited about that. And so I guess he saw something in me, and I think in a way maybe I remind him of himself. He's from the suburbs of Chicago. He's from Naperville, and he did Second City, and he and I have a similar sensibility, I think. So I think maybe...
Has he ever given you advice?
Yeah, oh yeah.
He
helped me with my SNL audition.
How did he help you?
He said exactly what we were just talking about. Don't worry so much about the impressions. They're not going to hire. If they were to hire you, you wouldn't be the impression guy. They wouldn't hire you to be Daryl Hammond or Taron Killam or the other guy who does impressions. They would hire you. They would hire you because you're you. So he got me out of my head worrying about that when I was putting together my...
Because he wrote for SNL, too.
Yeah.
All right, another... right here.
Chris, in my experience, it seems like so many students, they have that laser focus, like you described, on getting hired at Second City. So I have to go through conservatory, and then I have to make a boat in this many years. And can you describe how doing your own stuff at Annoyance, how that sort of... maybe might be a better or different path to sort of achieving, ending up in that same place where we are now.
Yeah. You know, I think when I said I had laser beam focus, like, what I meant was that I knew where I wanted to get, but I also, for 8 years in Chicago, had a fucking blast and did all these shows. You know, I did like 15 shows at The Annoyance, and I did all these goofy improv shows at I.O., and I hosted The Jam, and I just had fun and did shows that were fun for me to do, and I think stage time is so important. You can take classes until your face is blue, but stage time, performing in front of an audience, is so important. So I don't know if I'm answering your question necessarily, but I know what you mean. In Chicago now, it's very much like, I gotta do this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
And I think that gets in the way sometimes for people.
Great. Another question? Right here.
You said you were taking IO classes with adults at like 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. Was that intimidating for you or just sort of fun?
It was intimidating. I think just as valuable for me was seeing shows at IO. And I would literally, as much as I possibly could, on Monday night, I would drive into Chicago, or even when I didn't have my driver's license, my dad would drive me, and I would watch Armando. And I think what I was doing back then was kind of trying to copy what I saw in that show. And I was lucky to watch some great improvisers back then. Jimmy and, I mean, Horatio Sands and Rich Talrico and Craig Kukowski. And
Bob Dassey, and you had Noah. I mean, yeah.
TJ.
Stephanie Weir.
TJ. Yeah. Oh, my God. Like,
what
Stephanie
do you think?
Weir, Susan Messing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you had a lot of great people.
Yeah. So I think I was emulating what those people were doing on stage, and that was, yeah.
Great. Another question? Right here.
Right before the set, you mentioned that you were kind of tired of, like, fast comedy and you wanted to do something slow. Is there something that you pinpoint that you get out of slow comedy more, or are you just tired of fast?
I think that slow can be more rewarding in the long run. What you teach and TJ and Dave, and really committing to characters and slowing down and trying to build it organically, will have a bigger payoff in the end. But what happens for me right now, and I'm very aware of this, at Second City, you're performing to a lot of tourists, and they want the laughs quick, you know? And so in a set at Second City, it's like boom, 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 get a laugh, get a laugh, get a laugh, get a laugh. And that can feel, I think, a little jokey, and I get more out of slow, long stuff, but I don't get the opportunity to do it as much as I would like. And so that's the thing about Second City, though. It's like, you know, you work your ass off to get to this place, and then all of a sudden you're performing for tourists. You know? It's a little bit like, it's a little soul-crushing, kind of.
I'm going to ask you two questions, because we got to get you out of here so you can make your show at the place where it can be soul-crushing at times. And that is... What advice would you give an improviser today that's starting out?
I think what I said about stage time is just so important. Performing in front of people and having shitty shows and failing and falling on your face, but getting up and doing it over and over and over. That is so invaluable, I think. So I would say that, just seek out audiences as much as you possibly can. Then, you know, I would say, don't spread yourself too thin. We were talking backstage about, you know, back when you were doing shows,
Jazz Freddy. Yeah.
That show was so important to you, and...
Well, we cleared the deck. You committed to that show, and you didn't do anything else. So
yes.
You weren't running to a Herald team, you weren't doing anything for, you know, 8 weeks or whatever.
Exactly. I think that's important, too, is to not have too many irons in the fire. Because all of a sudden you're in 10 different groups, and it's like, okay, but am I getting better? I mean, you know.
And then the other thing I want to ask you is, you've done two shows at Second City, Saturday Night Live. We don't know. More will be revealed on that one. Where would you like to go? You want to do? Is main stage still a goal, or is it something else?
Main stage is, what I've said is, if they asked me to do it, I would have a hard time turning that job down. But literally tomorrow at 9 in the morning, I'm getting on a plane and going to Los Angeles for 4 days, and I'm taking a lot of meetings with casting people in Hollywood. So over the next 4 days, I have 10 meetings with casting people. So I'll probably get a move to Los Angeles soon. And you know, my goal out there, I would love to do something like Mr. Show. I would love to work with friends out there, Bob Odenkirk. I would also love to get on a TV show, write a TV show. I don't know, the future's pretty wide open for me.
Here's my prediction. You ready?
Yeah.
Are you available for my prediction?
Sure.
This will be your last ETC show.
Okay.
You'll move.
Yep.
And then Saturday night, once you get out there, you'll be there for about a year, 8 months, Saturday Night Live will call you and hire you. What do you think of that? What do you think of that?
You know, fuck.
Okay. Chris Masika, thank you so much for being
okay, there you have it. There's another Improv Nerd in the Can episode. Well, we don't do numbers around here. We just call it the Chris Witaski episode. I want to thank our guest, Chris Witaski, and I also want to thank Time Pelican, Walt Delaney, and John O'Toole for opening up for Chris here in Chicago. Also, the good people here at Stage 773, that's our home base. Those are the people that make us feel like a rock star. I'd like to thank them, as well as my producer, Ben Caprero, the guy who makes it so slick and so professional. You probably figure this out because you're smart people. We're on feralaudio.com. It's a podcast collective, and we're not alone on that podcast collective. People like Chelsea Peretti, Todd Barry, Matt Dwyer, they're there too. So check out feralaudio.com. And if you like Improv Nerd and what we're doing here, there's this thing called a donate button you can hit, and then we actually get some money. It's like hitting a slot machine. If you want to know more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, and my Improv Nerd blog, which I love doing and will give you tips on becoming a better improviser as well as a better person, go to my website, which is jimmycorain.com. If you want me to bring an Improv Nerd show to your improv theater or college with a series of my award-winning workshops, you can get a hold of me at jimcorain@gmail.com. And please, please, please like us on our Facebook page. All you have to do is find us on Facebook and find Improv Nerd and like us. It really helps with my low self-esteem. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it. And here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right. Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we call clubs discotheques? LOL. The 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome, not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.